Chapter 5. An Analysis of Corporate Income Taxation in Nebraska and Comparison with the 50 States. By Robert Carroll. Introduction. The imposition of the corporate income tax by 45 states and the federal government has resulted in myriad statutes and procedures imposing the tax on numerous bases and using various methodologies. The complexity of corporate taxation means that a thorough understanding of the corporate income tax is required for an analysis of Nebraska's corporate income tax. In this chapter, we undertake a broad and detailed analysis of the theoretical underpinnings of a corporate income tax and institutional structures existing in Nebraska, other states, and at the federal level. Examining corporate taxation outside of Nebraska is crucial to understanding the interaction and interrelationships between state corporate income taxes and the federal corporate income tax, and making sound recommendations for Nebraska. The findings here indicate that there are only minor problems with corporate taxation in Nebraska. The corporate income tax burden in Nebraska is low to moderate compared to the average for all states and compared to neighboring states that levy a corporate income tax. Overall, the corporate income tax appears well designed. The sales-only formula that is currently being phased in should be limited to a three-factor formula with a double weight given to sales. This scheme is both competitive with that in most other states and is less discriminatory with respect to various types of firms than the sales-only formula. Section 1 details the growth and importance of the state corporate income tax as a source of revenues and means of enhancing competitiveness. Section 2 outlines the theoretical framework for defining the tax base among firms operating across state boundaries. In addition, the treatment of foreign corporate income by the states is outlined with particular emphasis on foreign source dividends and credits for taxes paid to foreign governments. Section 3 explains the rationale behind the various approaches and methodologies used to apportion and allocate interstate corporate income to a taxing state. Interstate comparisons are drawn between the institutional structure used in Nebraska and the other states to apportion and allocate interstate corporate income. Section 4 reviews changes made to Nebraska's corporate income tax during the 1987 legislative session, which significantly altered the apportionment and allocation mechanism. To the extent possible, this section includes revenue implications of these changes. Section 5 concludes the chapter by providing recommendations for Nebraska. Corporate tax revenue. Corporate tax reliance. The state corporate income tax represented 8.1% of total tax collections among all states in 1986, and the proportion of revenues generated by the state tax has remained constant over the past few decades. During this same period, the federal corporate income tax has declined as a source of revenues. Table 5.1 illustrates the percent of corporate tax collections to total tax collections for all states, corporate income tax states, and the federal government for selected years beginning in 1960. Corporate income tax receipts have remained roughly constant relative to total receipts for those states with a corporate income tax, but have increased somewhat as a proportion of total receipts for all states. The federal corporate income tax has declined in importance relative to other federal revenue sources, decreasing from 23.2% in 1960 to 9.1% of total federal receipts in 1986. Thus, overall state corporate income taxes have increased in importance compared to the federal corporate income tax. The relative decline in federal corporate income tax receipts during the 1980s can, at least partly, be explained by the substantial changes to the federal corporate income tax base by the Economic Recovery Act of 1981, ERTA. Post-ERTA depreciation schedules and property classification rules allowed taxpayers to depreciate property at accelerated levels and represents an especially significant cause of the decline in the federal tax base. Although the Tax Reform Act of 1986 lowers federal corporate income tax rates, the broadening of the tax base has led to estimates for a $120 billion increase in corporate tax receipts over the next 5 years. Changes occurring to the federal tax base have a definite impact on the tax bases and revenues of those states that couple to federal taxable income. Consequently, the decline of corporate tax revenues experienced by Nebraska during the 1980s can be partially explained by the use of federal taxable income as a computational starting point for the Nebraska corporate income tax, and the changes to the federal base encompassed by ERTA. Nebraska has exhibited a low reliance on the corporate income tax as a source of tax revenues relative to other states. As indicated by Table 5-2, in 1985 Nebraska ranked 40th among the states in terms of corporate tax revenue as a percentage of total tax revenue. Colorado is the only corporate income tax state neighboring Nebraska with a lower ranking. Nebraska has consistently ranked in the lowest quartile of corporate income tax states since first imposing a corporate income tax state in 1968. Corporate tax burdens. Low reliance, corporate taxes, as a percent of total revenue, represents one measure of corporate tax burden. Corporate tax as a percent of income and several other measures give a more detailed picture of tax burden. Burden is measured here in four different ways. 1. Corporate tax revenues as a percent of total income. 2. The progressivity of the corporate income tax. 3. The corporate tax burden taking tax shifting into account. And 4. Nominal marginal corporate income tax rates. The calculation of some of these four measures is quite complex, and we rely on published calculations. In particular, the progressivity measure and the measure of burden taking shifting into account are based on published information for 1975 to 1976 data. However, our interest is in comparing Nebraska to other states, and the comparisons based on this dated information may still be indicative of the relative corporate income tax progressivity among states. The burden of the corporate income tax on personal income for Nebraska and its neighboring states in 1985 is shown in Table 5-3. The measure of burden used is corporate tax revenues as a percentage of personal income. There is considerable variation among the corporate income tax states. The state with the highest burden is Minnesota at 6.46%, the lowest is Colorado at 2.14% of personal income. As indicated in Table 5-3, Nebraska ranked 44th among the states in 1985 and ranked below all of its neighboring states imposing a corporate income tax, except for Colorado, which ranked 46th. Business climate studies often include the personal income measure of tax burden as an important factor influencing business location decisions. For example, the Grant Thornton Business Climate Study included state and local taxes per $1,000 of personal income as the fifth most important factor among the 22 measurement factors used to rank states by their business climates in 1986. But the use of tax burden figures based on personal income fails to address how the tax burden is distributed among taxpayers within a state. Consequently, analyses based solely on tax revenues as a percentage of personal income to measure tax burden differentials among the states and to draw conclusions regarding interlocational business decisions are not necessarily conclusive. To address the distribution of the tax burden issue, Table 5-4 depicts the progressivity levels of the corporate tax for Nebraska and its neighboring states for the 1975 to 1976 period. The index used is bounded by plus 1.0, where the highest income class bears the full burden, and minus 1.0, where the lowest income class bears the full burden. A tax is exactly proportional if the index exactly equals zero. All of the corporate income tax states listed have a progressive corporate income tax structure. Missouri's corporate tax exhibits the highest progressivity at 0.16. The Nebraska corporate income tax exhibits a progressivity index of 0.15 and only somewhat above the national average of 0.12. Although Nebraska's corporate income tax exhibits a higher progressivity index than all of its neighboring states except for Missouri, it should be noted that there is little variation among the progressivity levels not only of the states listed in Table 5-4, but among all states. This suggests that the progressivity of the corporate income tax does not vary much among the states, and gives weight to the argument that tax burden figures based on personal income accurately reflect interstate differentials in tax burdens among firms. Table 5.5 provides estimates for effective tax rates for Nebraska taking corporate tax shifting into account. In particular, corporate tax burdens are reported for Nebraska and its neighboring states for firms with a taxable income in excess of $35,000 under three incidence assumptions. 1. The tax is completely borne by capital. 2. The tax is completely shifted forward to consumers. And 3. The tax is borne 50% by consumers and 50% by capital. Nebraska's effective corporate tax rate is below all of its neighboring corporate tax states except Missouri, regardless of the incidence assumption. Minnesota has the highest corporate income tax rate of those states listed. Although these estimates are somewhat dated, they suggest that Nebraska has competitive corporate income tax rates relative to its neighboring states. The marginal tax rates and major features of the corporate income tax for Nebraska and its neighboring states, as outlined in Table 5-6, represents more current information on the corporate income tax rate structure. As indicated by Table 5-6, Iowa and Minnesota have the highest marginal rates, 12% for the highest income bracket. Kansas, Nebraska, Colorado, and Missouri have marginal rates between 4.50% and 6.75% depending upon the income class in question. The federal income tax is deductible only in Iowa, and the federal definition is used as the computational starting point for all of the neighboring corporate income tax states listed except for Minnesota. With the exception of South Dakota and Wyoming, which impose no corporate income tax, Nebraska's marginal tax rates are not appreciably different from most of its neighboring states, with the exception of Iowa, taking deductibility into account, and Minnesota, where Nebraska's rates are substantially less. In summary, the Nebraska corporate income tax has a relatively low tax burden when taxes are compared to personal income, exhibits low effective tax rates when tax shifting is taken into account, and has low or average marginal tax rates depending on the comparison state used. In addition, the progressivity estimates, although admittedly somewhat dated, suggest that Nebraska's corporate income tax is not substantially more progressive than neighboring states. Consequently, Nebraska's corporate income tax appears to be competitive with that in its neighboring states. Defining the state corporate income tax base: when the activities of a business enterprise are conducted wholly within a state, the enterprise's entire income is included within the state's tax base. This basic definition of corporate income becomes much more complicated when an enterprise operates across state boundaries. The procedures and methodologies used to apportion and allocate the income of an enterprise in the latter case also raise a number of economic issues. Two countervailing methodologies are used to define a state's corporate income tax base: 1. Unitary combination, and 2. Arm's length. The unitary combination method essentially combines the income of affiliated firms for tax purposes. Typically, a unitary group will include a parent corporation and its foreign and domestic subsidiaries. The firm whose commercial domicile is within the taxing jurisdiction is required to file a consolidated return which includes the income of all of the firms within the unitary group. In effect, the state share of the income of the entire unitary group is included within the tax base. The arm's length method assumes that a corporation can be split into distinct pieces representing the part of a corporation responsible for income generated within and without a taxing jurisdiction. Accordingly, the portion of the corporation not responsible for income generated within the jurisdiction is excluded from the tax base. In addition, affiliated corporations conducting business activities exclusively outside of the taxing jurisdiction, regardless of their connection to the corporation located within and taxed by the jurisdiction, are excluded from the tax base. The separate accounting principles are applied under the arm's length method to determine the income generated by a corporation within and outside of the jurisdiction. Separate accounting will be discussed in greater detail below. The state have generally used the unitary method in one form or another, while the United States government and most foreign governments have opted to use the arm's length method. For states, either method requires the tax code to define affiliated firms and confronts the problem of apportioning the income of the particular state. The states are constitutionally limited when imposing an income-based tax from taxing value earned outside their borders. As a result, the states attempt to identify that income attributable to business activities occurring within a particular state's borders. Three approaches are used to apportion interstate income among the states: 1. Formula apportionment, 2. Separate accounting, and 3. Specific allocation. Most states use formula apportionment to identify the corporate income attributable to a particular state. With only a few exceptions, the states use a three-factor apportionment formula, which is based, in equal parts, on the proportion of a business total payroll, property, and sales located within the taxing state. The apportionment formula takes into account the relative contributions of supplier-related components, capital and labor, and a demand component, markets. In addition to formula apportionment, most states, within certain limitations, permit the use of separate accounting and specific allocation. Separate accounting assumes that the operations of a multi-state business can be split in two pieces, e.g., based on the geographical borders of the states. This method has been faulted as being imprecise and subject to manipulation. Critics and the courts have stated that it often ignores the many subtle and largely unquantifiable transfers of value that can take place within a business enterprise spanning across several states or nations. Specific allocation recognizes that certain items, e.g., rents, royalties, dividends, and interest, are unapportionable and requires that the items be wholly attributed to one state or another. The use of the apportionment formula normally corresponds to the application of the unitary combination method, whereas the use of separate accounting is associated with the arm's length method. Unitary business. The United States Constitution does not allow a state to tax income arising out of interstate activities unless there is a minimal connection or nexus between the interstate activities and the taxing state, and a rational relationship between the income attributed to the state and the intrastate values of the enterprise. In determining whether intrastate values of an enterprise should be taxed, the United States Supreme Court has generally employed the three unities' ownership, operation, and use to support a finding for a unitary business. The court has stated that one common ownership, operation, and use is present among firms existing as part of a business enterprise. Its separate parts cannot be fairly considered by themselves since the value is derived from the unity of the enterprise. In such cases, the court has generally supported the finding of a unitary business and the taxing of intrastate values. The organization of business enterprises has given credence to the unitary method based upon a clearly defined economic rationale. However, it is the potential failure of separate accounting to allocate accurately income of a multi-state firm across several states that has led many states to apply the unitary business principle when defining the tax base for their corporate income tax. Among the attributes of the unitary method that have led to the desirability, on a theoretical basis, to group affiliated firms for tax purposes, two are of particular significance. 1. The transfer pricing of goods and services exchanged among firms at the various stages of the production process, perhaps to take advantage of non-competitive pricing, and the consequent inability to attribute accurately the income to each of the firms since the source of the income among the firms is unknown. 2. The existence of the unitary group in and of itself may be the source of the income which, as a result, cannot be accurately allocated to the individual firms since the source of the income is the enterprise and not the individual firms. In the first instance above, a vertically integrated business enterprise could exchange goods and services among firms within the enterprise using exchange prices that may not accurately reflect the value added to the product at each stage of production. When the enterprise's operations are conducted in both high and low tax jurisdictions, an enterprise could lower its tax liability by inflating transfer, selling prices in low tax states and deflating transfer prices in high tax states under separate accounting. The use of these transfer prices would attribute a higher proportion of corporate profits to low tax states. It is both the difficulty of using separate accounting accurately and the potential for willful distortion in the assignment of corporate profits among states that has encouraged the use of the unitary combination method. The unitary combination method obviates completely transfer pricing considerations. The second reason for the unitary method, the very nature of the business enterprise is the cause and source of a portion of the total income of the firm, is clearly found among vertically integrated business enterprises. Indeed, this has been cited as a reason for the formation of such a business arrangement. Savings from transactions costs and economies of scale are among the cost savings and income-producing benefits of a vertically integrated business. When vertical activities in the production distribution chain are organized within one firm, there is less need to shop around, less difficulty in appraising products and services, less expense in contracting, more certainty of supply and of markets, and more flexibility in adapting to changing conditions. The total cost of advertising, accounting, and legal services and research and development facilities may also be lower if borne by the enterprise rather than the individual firms. The arm's length method cannot attribute the additional income due to savings in transaction costs to particular firms, since it is the organization of the group that is the source of the income. Even though unitary combination may be attractive on a conceptual level, and because of the inadequacies of the arm's length method, unitary combination has been faulted for distorting the measurement of taxable income, which may result in either over or under taxation. As well, critics of the unitary combination method argue that worldwide unitary combination departs from the internationally accepted standard of taxation, which is based on arm's length or separate accounting principles. Worldwide unitary has given rise to vigorous objections by both foreign governments and foreign business, and may lead to retaliatory actions. Worldwide unitary combination is administratively burdensome and complex, especially for a foreign-based multinational which must report its worldwide income and apportionment factors in U.S. dollars under tax accounting principles used by the unitary states. A U.S. subsidiary may not have access to the necessary information relating to the activities of its foreign parent and sister subsidiaries, and may be prohibited by foreign law from access to that information. The absence of a consistent and appropriate definition of a unitary business gives rise to an unacceptable degree of taxpayer uncertainty and may discourage investment in the United States. Arm's length method. The arm's length method treats the portions of a business enterprise operating outside of a jurisdiction's boundaries as independent third parties from the portion operated inside the jurisdiction. The enterprise's activities inside the state are regarded as though they were carried on by a separate and distinct in-state entity. Accordingly, corporate income for this entity is computed without reference to receipts or operating expenses of the remainder of the corporation. The use of separate accounting ascertains which entity earned which profits on a jurisdictional basis. When the activities of a business enterprise occurring within a jurisdiction are truly separate and distinct from its activities without the jurisdiction, so that the segregation of income may be made clearly and accurately, the use of the separate accounting method is clearly appropriate. However, the usefulness of separate accounting diminishes, as when the business activities, inside and outside of a state, become interdependent. During the early part of this century, when the corporate income tax was first used by the states on a broad scale, separate accounting for multi-state operations was regarded as the most precise and accurate method of determining the income derived for the various states. However, with the development of open economies among the states and between nations, and the resurgence of multi-state and multinational firms, in most cases, separate accounting no longer permits the maintenance of records in a manner adequate for the state-by-state breakdown of data. The difficulty for a taxing jurisdiction to account for transfer pricing lessens the usefulness of separate accounting. The distortion of transfer prices by an enterprise can be remedied by a taxing jurisdiction if market prices exist to which it can compare the prices for the internal purchases of goods and services within the enterprise. The taxing jurisdiction would simply adjust purchase prices of goods and services exchanged within the enterprise to reflect the market prices of such goods and services. This adjustment of prices to reflect market conditions is precisely what the federal government attempts through adjustments authorized by Section 482 of the Internal Revenue Code. However, obvious administrative difficulties arise. Primarily, the existence of market prices for comparable exchanges of goods and services must exist. In addition, within an enterprise, millions of exchanges may take place among the firms, thereby making auditing the prices that FLRMS attached to each transaction difficult, if not impossible. Depending on the number of transactions that occur, it may be the case that the resources needed to compute the adjustment, e.g., auditors and associated resources, will be greater than the revenue resulting from the adjustment. The actual procedures and methodology set forth by Section 482 and the Internal Revenue Service practices involving such adjustments will be discussed in greater detail below when discussing the provisions of the federal corporate income tax. Critics of separate accounting have contended that, compared to worldwide unitary, its separate accounting may distort the measurement of taxable income. It may result in either over or under taxation. Because of the difficulties in getting accurate information from foreign-based multinationals, distortion may be greater for foreign-based multinationals than for U.S.-based ones. Because of possible income distortion, it may lead to undertaxation of multinationals. It may shift the corporate tax burden onto smaller business and put them at a competitive disadvantage. Because of the economic interdependence created by shared expenses, economies of scale, and other factors within a multinational, separate accounting may fail, even in theory, to measure income accurately. It is administratively complex. Given the millions of transactions that must be reviewed to audit on an arm's-length basis, it may be administratively burdensome for state revenue officials as well as taxpayers. States lack the resources to administer it effectively. The absence of consistent and appropriate ways to determine arm's-length prices may create an unacceptable degree of taxpayer uncertainty. Separate accounting departs from the accepted method of taxation, which is based on apportionment and the unitary business principle. The Reagan administration proposed federal legislation to limit the use of the worldwide unitary combination method by the states. The states responded that a limitation on their use of the unitary combination method would constitute an infringement on their ability to raise revenue and act independently of the federal government. Despite this response, many states have since changed their corporate income taxes away from worldwide unitary combination to stave off federal action. As of November 1986, it was reported that only three states, Alaska, Montana, and North Dakota, applied the worldwide unitary combination method. In place of worldwide unitary combination method, many states use the domestic combination method, a less encompassing method than the worldwide unitary approach. This method excludes certain foreign earned income from a state's tax base. There exists considerable variation among the states regarding what foreign earned income is excluded. Some states exclude the income of foreign subsidiaries, but include dividends received by a domestic corporation from the foreign subsidiary in the tax base. Other states exclude both the income and dividends of foreign subsidiaries, but include the income of domestic corporations operating abroad in the tax base. In addition, some states exclude all foreign earned income, whether earned by a foreign or domestic corporation. Nebraska's corporate income tax is best characterized as a domestic unitary combination approach. The Nebraska statute defines a unitary business as a business that is conducted as a single economic unit by one or more corporations with common ownership and shall include all activities in different lines of business that contribute to the single economic unit. Nebraska deviates from the worldwide unitary combination approach in its treatment of foreign source income. Essentially, Nebraska excludes the business activities of foreign corporations that do no business in Nebraska, but would be construed as belonging to a worldwide-based unitary business from its tax base. Treatment of foreign-source dividends. The treatment of foreign-source dividends by the state has been the focus of considerable disagreement between state policymakers and business leaders. The state have generally argued in favor of continued taxation of foreign-source dividends, while business leaders have adamantly opposed such taxation. The application of the unitary combination approach at the water's edge and the different treatment of such dividends by the states and the federal government poses some difficulty for determining whether foreign-source dividends should be included within the tax base. Under worldwide unitary combination, dividends paid from one corporation in the unitary group to another are eliminated from the calculation, as are other transactions between members of the combined group of affiliated firms. The question of how to treat foreign-source dividends paid by subsidiaries thus only arises in the case of water's edge limitation or unitary combination. Under separate accounting, the income from which foreign source dividends are paid is commonly attributed to foreign sources. Therefore, if the results of separate accounting are accepted, such dividends should not be included in the income of the parent and then apportioned to a state by some other method such as formula apportionment. Furthermore, it has been argued that including foreign source dividends in apportionable income of states is simply a highly deflective way of approximating the results of worldwide unitary combination via the back door, but only for domestic multinational corporations. The federal government excludes for tax purposes 100% of corporate dividends received from a domestic corporation, where 80% or more of the stock of the domestic corporation is owned by the receiving corporation. In the case where the domestic corporation is not 80% or more owned by the receiving corporation, the federal government permits an 80% dividend exclusion. Dividends received from foreign corporations are entirely included in the federal tax base. As mentioned above, the federal government permits corporations to deduct or take a credit for foreign taxes paid. This provision, discussed in greater detail below, is intended to prevent double taxation of foreign source income that has already been taxed once by the host country. As dividends received from foreign corporations are included in the federal tax base, they are implicitly included in the tax bases of states that use the federal taxable income as a computational starting point for their state corporate income tax, unless provisions explicitly excluding such dividends have been adopted by the taxing state. As indicated by Table 5731, corporate income tax states exclude, at least partially, foreign source dividends from the tax base. Among Nebraska's neighboring states, Iowa and Kansas include foreign source dividends in the tax base. Colorado and Minnesota partially exclude such dividends from the tax base. Only Missouri and Nebraska exclude 100% of foreign source dividends. Federal foreign tax credit and implications for states. Consistent with the full taxation of foreign dividends, the federal government permits corporations to claim either a tax credit or a deduction for foreign taxes paid to foreign nations to offset the federal tax upon foreign source income. In the case of a credit, the federal government limits this credit to the amount at which such income would be taxed if it were U.S. income. Consequently, a corporation that has paid foreign taxes at overall effective rates above the U.S. level would obtain no reduction on its U.S. tax for such excess credits. However, excess taxes paid to one foreign country at rates higher than the U.S. can, subject to a maximum, be used to offset U.S. tax due on income earned in another foreign country, whose rates are lower than the U.S. rates. The potential for use of excess credits to avoid U.S. federal tax liability was the rationale for the alteration in the calculation of the foreign tax credit by the Tax Reform Act of 1986. Generally, taxpayers with excess credits, and particularly those taxpayers with a surplus of excess credits, are thought to have an incentive to increase foreign income against which excess credits may be claimed. Income that is easily manipulable as to source, e.g., portfolio investment income, may be shifted from U.S. corporations to foreign corporations to provide foreign income against which excess credits may be claimed. since the lowering of federal corporate tax rates by the Tax Reform Act was expected to increase the excess credits position of U.S. multinational corporations, this may have resulted in an unintended favoring of foreign investment over U.S. investment. To counter this disincentive for U.S. investment relative to foreign investment, the Tax Reform Act altered the manner in which the foreign tax credit is calculated. Specifically, foreign source income must now be segregated into 10 income categories, whereby the foreign tax credit limitation is applied separately to each income category. The additional income categories created by the Tax Reform Act are described as easily manipulable, as the source of income, or frequently bear little foreign tax, or high foreign tax. The separate application of the foreign tax credit to these additional categories will limit the potential for decreasing federal tax liability through the manipulation of income between the United States and foreign nations. The net effect of the federal foreign tax credit deduction is for foreign source income to be taxed at whichever tax rate is higher, the U.S. tax rate, or that in the foreign source country. This practice eliminates the potential for a tax penalty against income from foreign sources, e.g., double taxation of foreign income, and attempts to provide equal treatment of foreign and domestic source income. This federal practice has implications for the states depending whether, 1, the type of corporation in question is foreign or domestically incorporated, and, 2, the corporation chooses the federal foreign tax credit or deduction. In the case of a foreign incorporated firm, foreign source income and foreign taxes are excluded from the federal base and accordingly from state tax bases of states using federal taxable income as the computational starting point for the state tax. In the case of a domestic corporation that operates primarily abroad, commonly referred to as AT-20 corporations, the inclusion of foreign taxes in the state base is contingent on whether the corporation opts for the deduction or credit. Federal law defines firms that incorporate within the United States and carry out no more than 20% of their operations within the United States as AT-20 corporations. If the deduction is chosen, then foreign taxes are implicitly excluded from the tax base of states using federal taxable income as the computational starting point for the state tax. If the credit is chosen, foreign taxes are included in the state base. In order for the states to follow the consistent treatment of foreign and domestic source income by the federal government, a state must either exclude both foreign corporate income taxes and the federal corporate income tax, net of the federal credit deduction, from the state tax base, or include both in the state tax base. Generally, the states accommodate foreign and the federal tax issue by allowing 1. A deduction for federal income taxes, 2. The deduction of foreign taxes, or 3. Firms using the federal foreign tax deduction implicitly deduct such taxes from the state base by using federal taxable income as the computational starting point for the state tax. The specific treatment of foreign and federal corporate income taxes vary substantially between the states. Among Nebraska's neighboring states, both Iowa and Missouri allow taxpayers to deduct the federal income tax from the state tax base. Minnesota and Missouri allow the deduction of foreign taxes to at least some extent. In 1984, Nebraska enacted legislation that allows a deduction for foreign taxes paid in excess of what would be due in the United States if the corporation were a domestic rather than a foreign corporation. Thus, the tax treatment of foreign source income for AT-20 corporations is exactly the same as domestic source income. Allocation and apportionment. Once the tax base is defined, a state must then identify the intrastate income earned by an enterprise operating within its borders. In the case of real and tangible property, states generally employ the specific allocation method. Following this method, income earned by real and tangible property located within or associated with a state is allocated exclusively to that state. Specific allocation is applied in many states to rents and royalties from real estate, including oil and mineral royalties, and from tangible personal property, patents and copyright royalties, dividends and interest, capital gains and losses, and, in some states, to compensation for services. A similar allocation scheme for intangible property, however, is problematic. For example, consider Enterprise X, which produces in State A and sells in State B. Income is generated in State A from the production of the product, but also earned in State B through the use of its markets. Accordingly, both states attempt to tax that income earned within its borders, thereby requiring the apportionment of the income of the enterprise to the states.